It's time for a Big Blue Kickoff Live.
Nobody can ever tell you that you couldn't do it, because you did.
On Giants.com.
You know what I saw? New York Giant Prime.
And the Giants mobile app.
We'll punch you in the nose for 60 minutes with a relentless competitive attitude.
Part of the Giants Podcast Network.
Let's go out there like a bunch of crazy dogs. Have some fun.
Welcome to Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Thanks so much for tuning in. He is Paul DiTino. I'm Lance Menno. With you for the next 60 minutes. Multiple ways you can interact with us on the phones, 973-667-1960. You can also find us on Twitter using hashtag Giants Chat. As a reminder, you can find the archive of this show and our entire podcast network on the Giants mobile app, podcast platforms everywhere, and at giants.com/podcast. So we have plenty to tackle over these next 60 minutes. But right off the top, we are joined by a very special guest, as we have been joined by a few special guests over the last few days, focusing in on each one of the Giants' six picks. And today, we're going to turn our attention to their first-round pick, Kadarius Toney out of Florida, because before he headed to Florida, he starred at Matty T. Blunt High School in Pritchard, Alabama. And we are now joined by the head football coach there, as well as the athletic director, Lev Holly. Coach, you got Lance Meadow, Paul DiTino here on Giants.com, Big Blue Kickoff Live. Greatly appreciate the time this afternoon. Hope you and yours are safe and healthy. How's everything on your end?
Everything is fine, man. Just excited to be on and talk about Kadarius.
Absolutely, and it's a pleasure having you on the program. So let's start with how your relationship first came about in terms of the first time you got a glimpse of Kadarius Toney and how you really, Coach, honed in on where to showcase him on the high school football field, given such an eclectic group of skills that he could showcase.
Well, it first started off, I took the job in April of 2015, and I remember just like going through the first meeting the team first off, and before I got a chance to meet the team, I got a chance to really look at film, evaluate film, and I realized like the guy had some really some intangibles that I thought could be really special. He was just a raw athlete. He was a competitor, and I just remember the first conversation, and I just told him, I said, man, you got a chance to be really special, and if we're going to do it, it's going to be because of you. So wherever we go, you're going to take us. And he accepted it. He accepted the role and accepted the responsibility of being that guy. And I look at the success over this program over the last 6 years, and it definitely started with the Kadarius Toney and his era here at Blount High School.
Coach, let me ask you about his maturing process. You've obviously known him a long time. I've seen comments where, you've mentored him as he has grown up and become a young man and now going to be an NFL player. Could you give us a thumbnail sketch of how he has developed, not just on the field, but as a guy?
Well, I think it goes with maturity, and I'm going to take some credit, but I'm going to give more credit to his parents. I think they've done a wonderful job of raising him and keeping him in a position that he's in of growing, and something that I can't sit here and just say that I've had everything to do with that, because I have to think it takes a village to raise a child, and the village definitely raised Kadarius from his middle school to his high school, to the community, to the church, and to just outsiders. His personality stands out. But as far as him as a person, man, I don't think you meet a better person. Like I say, everybody saw the football side. But I know Kadarius as the person. So a lot of the things that I've watched him grow just from, I know in high school, it got situations where, hey, man, I need you to play DB. Okay. Hey, I need you to to run down on kickoff. Okay. But, then making that transition, leaving out of high school, being a top-notch quarterback in the state of Alabama, one of the top two, if not the top quarterback in the state that year. You look at Blount High School, over my 2 years, he threw for right at 6,800 yards, all right at 100 touchdowns, had 5 1,000-yard receivers in 2 years. So, you look at the success rate, it was very high, but to be able to put that aside, and I think that's what brought Florida out. Florida was really honest through the recruiting process. No, they didn't blow no smoke. They pretty much told them, like, hey, you're coming in as a quarterback. If you win the job, great. If not, then, hey, you're too talented not to be on the field. and we'll move you to receiver. So when that happened, I mean, he took it. You know, he had to go in and learn his craft. You know, and I think Coach Mullencombe is not a knock against Coach McElwain and his, you know, the success that he had down there. But I thought Coach Mullen's system fit Kadarius a lot more. I think Kadarius was more of a person harboring that system. You go back and look at Florida in 2006, 2007, 2008, when they was making those runs, you know, Person Harbor was the guy. And I think he made everything go. So, you know, I think it says a lot about him. And I think this year, you know, gave him those years to start developing as a receiver and learn the game at that position. And I think that's why the New York Giants selected him 20th overall.
Coach, if I could ask you just to follow up and rewind it just a tad when he's deciding what he wants to do in terms of his college selection. I had read that Alabama made a late push after he had already committed to Florida. I wonder how things might have turned out if he wound up with the Crimson Tide and Nick Saban. And, of course, he probably would have run into Joe Judge there, too, had he gone to Alabama.
Well, I think it didn't matter where he was going to go. He was destined for the position that he's in right now. Not because of his football skill, but because of what he brings to the table. He's a very likable guy, lovable guy in the locker room. And I think that says a lot about who you are on the field. And I was just telling somebody today, you know, that you can teach what you know, but you reproduce who you are. And I think the biggest thing about that is that Kadarius is just a guy. I mean, and when he walks in the room, you know he's there. And, you know, and it's not so much what he says, it's because of his actions. You know, I've seen him take his shirt off his back and give to one of his brothers, take his shoes off, give to a brother. And, you know, and those things happen, you know, because I think when you're a better person, you're going to become a better player. So, and I think those are the things that, you know, from a cultural side that we try to instill every single day. You know, that everything that we done was about being great fathers. It was about being great husbands. It was about being great professionals. And it was about being great citizens. And I think this world, they need those four characters.
Coach, a big part of playing the quarterback position is understanding the mental side of things when it comes to the game of football. I'm curious, over the years in which he played the quarterback position for you, and then you see, as you pointed out, how much he's evolved as a football player, being utilized as a weapon essentially at Florida, how much do you think his experience at quarterback opened up his eyes to understanding really just about every position on offense and giving him that much more flexibility as a player as he joins the New York Giants?
I think it was huge. I mean, there's no way that, you know, and how we – a lot of coaches coach quarterbacks just to play the position. But, you know, we coach quarterbacks to play the game. And I think that's been one of the biggest assets of Kadarius. He was taught how to play the game. He understood protections. He understand blitzers. He understand throwing the hot route. You know, so in order to do all that, and we put a lot on Kadarius. Most people don't know that when Kadarius got to the line, Kadarius had three plays to run. And he could call at any time, and we trust him. The only time we told him was third down, you pretty much run what's called, unless it's more of a short situation. You know, so, I mean, that's kind of, if you want to talk about IQ, the IQ is very high for the game anyway. So you add great IQ, you add athletic ability, you add just pretty rawness, you add competitor. You add a human joystick. I mean, you getting the total package, you know. But I think he's equipped to do that kind of stuff because he not just learned to play the quarterback position, but learn how to play the game, and, you know, and get some experience on defense, understanding what receivers trying to do. You know, I think all of that goes into play. You know what I mean? Because sometimes, you know, when you send a blitz, you got to check that hot route. You know, you got to run away from the call. So I think all that stuff, man, plays hand in hand. So I'm not surprised of his success at all. You know, like I said, I've never worried about Kadarius in any faith. You know, I just knew that he was going to be a guy that would be there, get it done. And if he got that opportunity, he was going to make the best out of it. And I could see him being in the league a long time, forbid those injuries.
Coach, you told one of your local newspapers, and I'm going to read this quote, just a guy who plays the game with a different passion. We've seen a lot of guys who love to win, guys who hate to lose, guys who give 150% on the field. Could you give me an example of what you meant when you said that about him specifically?
Well, I think it goes with the how factor. I mean, if you look at a lot of my tweets, I'm a hashtag and I'm going to say highway. I'm going to capitalize the H, lowercase the O, capitalize the W, lowercase the A, and capitalize the Y. So if you take those capital letters, it means highway. You know, when you're on a highway, you know, you have a straight path, you have a bumpy path, you have a curve, you have a hill, you have a downhill slope, uphill slope. So you get everything in between. And, you know, so when I say he plays with a different passion, it goes back to the how. It's how you win. It's how you lose. You know, how do you accept mediocrity? How do you accept success? How do you accept failure? So basically it goes back into understanding the how factor. So it talks about, you know, an A mentality versus a Z mentality. So A being attitude, Z being success. But in between that A and Z is a hyphen. And that hyphen goes back and it ties into that highway of you never know what you're going to encounter. You just have to go on the ride. So if you have to stop at a red light, you have to wait in traffic, then, hey, guess what? It's about the destination. It's about getting to that journey. It may take longer. It may be a shorter route. Who knows? But it's about how you do those things and how well, you know, that you go in and you accept every responsibility and accept what comes with being successful, accept with some failure. You know, so, I mean, so when I said that, it basically goes back to the how factor.
We're talking with Lev Holley, the high school head football coach at Blount High School in Pritchard, Alabama, where he coached Kadarius Toney, the Giants' first-round pick in this year's draft. Coach, earlier, I want to piggyback off of a point you brought up. You factored in the fact that the Florida offensive scheme, you said, was a really good fit for Kadarius Toney's skill set. And if we just look ahead to perhaps how the Giants can utilize him, it would be very surprising if they don't try to tap into some of the similar things that Florida utilized, including perhaps even tapping into his arm as a quarterback, given Jason Garrett utilized Golden Tate, another former quarterback, in that role last season. What does it say about Toney, the fact that he can keep on top of all of these different roles and continue to improve when in any given game, coach, they may emphasize him as a running back, they may emphasize him as a wide receiver, they may emphasize his arm? What does that say about how he's evolved as a football player?
Basically, it pretty much describes you better know where he is on the field. And that's one thing. And, I mean, as a defensive-minded guy who had been really successful as a coordinator, he's that guy that I'm going to always know where he is on the field. And I'm going to have different packages, you know, and a lot of times it's tough because, you know, you see this guy out in the slot, okay? Most times, 9 times out of 10, he's probably on your third-best defender on the field. Okay, you see him out wide, he can run by you. Okay, well, once he goes in motion, it's an adjustment that has to be made. You have to keep box integrity. I think the Giants have a really good problem with Saquon Barkley. He comes back healthy. Daniel Jones, I think, is a top notch guy in the intermediate game. Darius Slayton can cover the field. So, you know, but then you go back in that same concept, and he's the most all simple, he's a quarterback. What do you do? He's not there just because you just think, hey, most guys getting wildcat, he's a runner. Well, he is a passer too. So, you know, you have a lot to think about, and it's a lot that he put a lot of pressure on defense to be really based, to really have to adjust and really have to be sound at what you're doing. So, you know, I'm not surprised. I wouldn't be surprised, and I'm pretty sure if the Giants don't do it, then, hey, they need to call me to come coach. why wouldn't you do that? You know what I mean? But I think that when it's all said and done, I mean, I really see him being really successful at that level because there's one thing I know. It ain't many in the league that's going to outwork you. You know, like I say, man, I think he did. He took it, you know, instead of training in Florida, he went all the way across the country to train, which I think that says a lot about him. You know, and I tell people all the time, it's times I'll call him, and I may not get him. It may be 3-4 days before he call me back, or, you know, and that's fine. But the one thing that I know is that he's doing what he loves, and he's working at it. He's perfecting his craft. You know, the one thing that we talked about, you know, we talked during the Senior Bowl a lot, and I told him, you know, hey, this is a point, you know, you got to clock in, you know, and that was one thing that we talked about every day about, you know, with culture, you know, about bricks, you know, laying bricks. And a lot of times, you know, we talked about, you know, when people see all these brick buildings and they pay attention to the bricks and how good it looks, and but not how many times do people pay attention to the mortar that hold that brick together. You know, so I think KT is a guy that he is the mortar in a lot of things that he does, you know. And, I mean, I know he took some criticism on some stuff, you know, and I think it was my job to go out and say, hey, man, I know him as the person. You know, and that was one thing that, you know, I was really big on the stereotype. Don't stereotype my guy. Know him before you do that. And I think once you get to know him, you erase every last one of those words that you said.
Coach, kind of along those lines, how critical or how much of an advantage do you think it is that the Giants have some assistant coaches on their staff who were in the NCAA level and they recruited Tony when he was coming out of high school? I mean, Jeremy Pruitt is one of the names that immediately comes to mind. Do you think their familiarity with him and vice versa will assist in his transition as he comes into the NFL and specifically as he adapts to New York and the Giants? I'm going to assume he's probably never been here before.
I don't know if he has or not, but I know this. You have Jeremy Pruitt, who is an Alabama native. You have Jody Wright, who was at Alabama. You have Kevin Shearer, that was also, you know, and those are high school guys. I mean, so they get it. You know, Jeremy Pruitt is the one that if you go back and look in history, the number of guys that he signed out this area, it is unreal, and they've been really successful. And I think Jeremy is a really good coach. But the one thing about Jeremy Pruitt is a hell of a person, you know, and he's a guy that's going to help you. Jody Wright, he's been really successful being one of Coach Saban's right hand. I mean, so I think it says a lot. I think it's really helpful, you know, that you're away from home, you got somebody that you do have a relationship with. But that, and I'm saying, and I hope every younger kid that has aspiration to play college ball is listening, relationships are so important. Because you never know in this profession, you never know who's going to coach you. And I think that's one important, this is a lesson that can be learned that, you know, when you're on that recruiting trail and coaches want to talk to you, be diligent about what you do. And do it with a bunch of integrity. Because, you know, the same bridge you burn may be one you have to come back across. So, you know, I think it's big to those guys out there. And, I mean, and I think it's kind of one of those situations that, man, it's kind of it was a no-brainer when everything came to fruition.
Yeah, it's a reflection to your point, Coach. It's such a small world within the football community. You never know who you're going to cross paths with maybe in high school that you'll eventually once again meet on the NFL level, which certainly you and Kadarius Toney can attest to as he comes full circle here with a lot of familiar faces with the New York Giants. Talking about character and perhaps the things that people don't notice about Kadarius Toney, I found it interesting, Coach, that earlier this year, your school retired his number. Where I'm not saying that I'm taking a poll across the country, but I would say that's pretty unique and rare that even before a guy gets to the NFL level, they're already honoring him at his high school and making sure that nobody else ever wears that number. How did that process come into play, and what do you think that says about Tony's impact in a very small period of time since he even left that program?
Well, you got to realize the history. I mean, and, you know, that was me being here. That was my first quarterback when I got here. But the impact, you know, and in 6 years, we've signed over 50-plus guys to college scholarships. 50 in a matter of 6 years. Mm. You know, and this is – football is these guys' way out. I'm going to be totally honest with you. You know, whether it's at a Division I level all the way down to the NAIA level. You know, but these guys come and they pour their heart and soul into it. And Kadarius, you know, in my era, he was the foundation of it. You know, so you look at, you know, the guys he was throwing it to, Reginald Todd, you know, who's going to have a chance to get drafted against the upcoming year. You know, Lee Hunter, who's at Auburn. You know, Jarvis Williams, Amani Diamond, D'Angelo Anderson, Mario Dungy, Kobe McCurry. But it all stems back to, you know, I mean, the Blunt always have had a tradition and guys came through. But the one thing that we came in is that we wanted to make it where when coaches came in, they didn't have to worry about kids being eligible. They didn't have to worry about character. You know, we want and kids, not but kids. You know, when you talk about a Kadarius Toney, Kadarius is this and, not a Kadarius this but. You know, so, you know, making it an and more and not about the but. You know, but when it comes to hanging it on the wall, I mean, you're talking about a kid who threw for right at 9,000 yards after in his career, over 100 touchdowns plus, and the impact that, you know, and it's bigger than the field. The impact that he had on the kids up under him. So you talk about a guy that has paid it forward. Man, that guy has paid it forward. So, you know, I felt obligated, and it was like a no-brainer. When I mentioned it to the principal, you know, he was like, "Coach, that's – I agree." And, you know, and there it is. So that's pretty much the history of it. And, you know, that's what it is.
Final one for me, Coach. What is the one thing that you would love to see happen – for Toney during his rookie season with the Giants above all else?
Just stay healthy. Actually, I think if he stays healthy, and I know in football there are injuries and there's nagging injuries, but if he stays healthy, he's going to rip it up. Watch what I tell you. You heard it here first.
I believe you.
And Giants fans certainly wouldn't complain from that standpoint. Coach, before we let you go, and we certainly appreciate the time and the insight, the other thing that he took part of at the high school level was he was a track and field athlete, which I don't necessarily think is surprising, but when you're focusing in on the quarterback position as you worked with him on the high school level, how much did you work with him to maybe focus in on specific skill sets that you think would help him later on in his career to make it a little bit more structured as opposed to him really going all over the place in terms of his athletic prowess?
Well, the one thing about, you know, we share a bunch of athletes. You know, a lot of over, I guess, 75-80% of our athletes are two-sport athletes. And the ones that are not are the ones that have jobs. So, I mean, they're constantly doing something. But football and track, I think, goes hand in hand. If you can learn how to run, you know, with his natural skill set, but can learn those little small techniques of a trackster, I think that's when people doubt it. Okay, he has all the moves, shifty, he's a real shifty guy. On a straight line, how fast is he? I think that's when that 4.39 kicked in. I'm going to be honest with you. You know, but then one thing about the track, when you're on the track, you can't hide. You either have it or you don't have it. You know, so I think that's just it. And that's a competitor. You got to compete in track. You know, because you got guys that, hey, they may not be strong, but they're just faster. They beat you on technique. You know, I was listening to, like, one of the premier track coaches down here, and he was saying, you know, I could never beat this guy. He said, but then I realized this. We sitting there, and we'll stagger. They got me boxed in. He said, but I'm listening. I started listening with my ears, and I hear him take one or two deep breaths. I know right then I got him. You know, so it's a little small detail stuff, man. And I think that stuff, if you get those small detail things, I go back. And again, and not only detail, but when you can apply it and make it about application, that's how you create greatness. I mean, I can sit in the classroom, but if I can't apply what the teacher's teaching me, then I can't pass the test. But if I can apply what they're doing, if I can plug in the numbers from the board to the formula, guess what? I'm going to get the answer. Same thing about life. So just very excited for him. And like I said, man, I expect great things. And, you know, we love him. You know, we love all our guys. You know, and think about it, like I tell people all the time, the day that it starts being about me and not about these kids, then, hey, that's the day it's time for me to walk away. But like I said, I'm very honored. I'm very thankful. I'm very grateful to have the opportunity to coach him. And that's all my players, not just Kadarius. And like I tell people all the time, you know, without parents, you know, we don't have kids. And without kids, we don't have jobs. So, you know, but I think it's about the foundation. I think it's about the growth and the maturity. And I think it's about, you know, just keeping God first in everything that you do. You know, and when it's all said and done, just give honor and give praise to God and thank him for this opportunity.
And a huge opportunity lying ahead now for Kadarius Toney, the first-round selection for the New York Giants in the 2021 draft. He is Lev Holly. He coached him in high school at Matty T. Blunt High School. He's also the athletic director there. Coach, can't thank you enough. We greatly appreciate the time and the insight. Best of luck with your upcoming season, and we look forward to talking to you down the road. Thanks again.
Thanks, Coach.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
You got it. Lev Holly with us here on Big Blue Kickoff Live, providing some great stories about Kadarius Toney at the high school level, as well as his family and how he really evolved as a football player. It's amazing how you look at him as a quarterback in high school, and the coach Paul threw out all of his numbers and his statistics, without a doubt, jump off the page. Then he goes to Florida after he was at least recognized as a quarterback, but they said, hey, if it doesn't work out as a QB, we're going to find ways to put you on the field and get you in a position where you could do damage with the football. And they did. And now all of a sudden, a few years later, he gets drafted in the first round as a weapon, essentially, for the New York Giants. So I'm always impressed when you hear about the evolution of a player, because, you know, we tend to typecast players. Hey, this guy is going to do just this. And, you know, Toney has pretty much showcased some versatility, but at the same time, completely changed positions, I think it's fair to say.
Oh, yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about what you just said, Lance. But for me, one of the biggest takeaways from that interview was the fact that the Giants have three assistants who came from the college ranks who recruited this guy as a high school athlete going into the NCAA level. And, of course, you had to know that they did all their due diligence then. If they didn't do it now, they certainly had background information then that they took with them and brought to this organization. And as Toney progressed through the Florida Gators ranks, you know that those assistants were probably keeping an eye on him. They remembered everything they knew about him. And I don't think there's any doubt that memory bank or that data bank was tapped into when the Giants started to think about the chances that they might have to take him. And, you know, how many times have we talked about the last 2 years, the Giants having a young coaching staff, but an experienced coaching staff that had many years of NCAA time under their belts? We've been talking about this now ever since Judge got here, that he assembled a phenomenal coaching staff, but guys who, specifically in the SEC, had so many tentacles, so many spider webs, and the reaches and the personalities and the relationships that were going to be an asset to this team. I'm going to go as far as to say that the Giants' background, research, and in-depth knowledge of Kadarius Toney probably enhanced his chances of being picked by this team in the first round.
Sure, I think that's fair, especially since, as Lev Holly just spoke about, he has relationships with at least three members of this coaching staff, and I guarantee you had conversations with them when they were recruiting Kadarius Toney at the collegiate level. So there's no doubt about it that if they needed to pick up the phone and have a conversation with Holly, if they needed some things clarified from his past, that who better to turn to than somebody who was with him on a daily basis for the last 2 years of his high school career. I don't doubt that at all. And remember, beneficial, especially over the last 2 years, given the fact that you're exposure to high school prospects, college prospects is limited because you just weren't able to travel with your scouting department as much. So I think it was extremely beneficial given the current circumstances and landscape, forget of the NFL, just the country as a whole, that if you could pick up the phone and talk to people without having to be there in person, it at least could give you an extra layer of intel. And there's no doubt about it. I think it helped the Giants with respect to Toney, as well as with respect to Azeez Ojulari, because here's another guy that played in the SEC for the last few years, and you have members of the coaching staff who are connected to that. So I think it goes hand in hand with respect to those two players. Limited Giant season tickets are on sale now for the 2021 season. In addition to ticket savings, membership benefits include access to exclusive events, experiences, pre-sales, and more. You can lock in your seats starting at just $100. Call 888-NYG-1925, or you can visit giants.com/tickets for more information. Also, don't miss out on your chance to experience a premier hospitality experience watching Giants games and world-class concerts in 2021 as a Giants suite partner. Limited full-season locations are available, or you can place a deposit for individual games. You could call also 888-NYG-1925, or you can visit giants.com/suites for more information. As we move along here till the top of the hour, Lance Metal, Paul Dottino with you, Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Let's open up the lines. Jimmy is in Virginia, and he joins us now. What's happening, Jimmy?
Hey, Lance. Hey, Paul. How are you guys doing?
Hi.
Doing all right. What's on your mind?
Hey, not much. I just wanted to say, hey, great interview with the coach and everything about Tony. That was pretty freaking awesome. So can't argue with that. Good stuff there. Hey, I just wanted to kind of get your guys' minds on I definitely loved what the Giants did over in the draft and everything, especially with trading back. That was completely uncharacteristic of Dave Gettleman and everything. So I thought it was great picking up a first round pick and whatnot for next year. But I kind of wanted to get your guys' take on kind of where you guys see Ojulari and everything kind of being placed this year, kind of like what kind of impact he can make, and like kind of where you guys see him being like brought in over on the edge, being paired with Williams, and just let the rest of that team, the Grand, can end up kind of like divvying up and everything. Kind of get your guys' take on that.
Well, I think, you know, obviously he's a rookie, so he's going to come in here and they're going to try to bring him along with packages. You're not going to give him the entire smorgasbord or the salad bar at once. We all get that. We know he is a terror coming off of the edge, and we know he certainly is going to need, you know, to kind of strengthen himself up and try to work some against the run as he eventually becomes a full-time player in this league. But right now, I would think, and Lance, you may feel differently, I would think that just as a rookie, he's probably going to be a situational pass rusher who they will simply use to get after the quarterback. And I don't think they would give him much more than that to digest as a first-year player.
Yeah, because, I mean, I think you also look at, now granted, the two guys I'm going to name were later draft picks last year, but Joe Judge is the first one to tell you it really doesn't matter where you were selected once you got on the roster. Now it's a matter of actually coming through and being productive. But guys like Cam Brown and Cutter Coughlin, and I get it, they were sixth and seventh round picks, so maybe the expectations weren't as high as at Ojulari, but they were situational guys and also earned some playing time as there were some injuries. I also think you can't overlook the fact that Lorenzo Carter and O'Shane Zimenez are more polished veteran players who still have a lot to prove but have been in the league for a little bit. So they're going to look to get those guys back to full health and involved. You also signed Ifeanyi Odenigbo, who's another one who's been in the league for a few years. And I would think that they're going to try to get those guys out on the field in other situations and circumstances. So Ojulari, to me, fits into the equation of being a rotational type of guy where you get as many guys on the field, matchup in, matchup out. And as the season progresses, Paul, I could see him get more and more comfortable, assuming he stays healthy, and then maybe they expand his role, which was no different than the path that some of these other younger guys took. But I don't think Ojulari's coming in and Carter, Zimenez, and Odenigbo are just taking a back seat. They're going to make sure they utilize all four of those guys that I just named. And Ryan Anderson, I should name too.
Yeah, and Jimmy, by the way, let's make something very clear. If for some reason, and this is entirely possible, if Lorenzo Carter comes out of the box like a house on fire and in the first month of the season is just tearing up the football field, or maybe Zimenez is doing that for all I know, you're not going to take snaps away from those guys right away. You're not going to be anxious to do it, nor should you. So if Ojulari is forced to wait a little bit because there's a rookie learning curve and one of the veterans is deserving of those snaps because he is devastating opposing teams' offenses, well, then more power to them, and then Ojulari just has to wait his turn. I wouldn't have a problem with that either.
No, I totally agree. And I think with also having like these preseason games come in this year, it's definitely going to be a good factor in the truck, because obviously you got like a bunch of guys that they signed, because you're also forgetting Bobby Anderson and everything too being signed as well. So like obviously you got like six, seven guys along with Ellerson that got drafted and whatnot to kind of compete for that edge rusher type of, like, also depending on how Graham wants to use him, bring him inside, rushing on the inside, rushing on the outside. There's just so many different ways that you can kind of bring all these different guys. I 100% agree with everything you guys are saying. So it's like, it's going to be quite a competition. So it'll be very exciting to kind of see the way that they go with, like, kind of like who they decide to end up, like the amount of guys that they decide to kind of keep on the 52, or I guess 53 at this point. So, I'm not trying to ask you guys to kind of predict, but do you guys, like, I'm not asking you specific names, but do you guys see maybe them keeping about 5 to 6 rushers? How many think will end up making the final roster?
Well, we'll let you go on that note, Jimmy. Appreciate the phone call. I think they're going to try to keep as many as possible. I do think, though, Paul, the individuals who have a little bit more special teams contribution power, as well as individuals who maybe you feel comfortable moving inside for a few snaps, mm-hmm. probably have a better chance of retaining a spot on the 53-man roster. Because remember, and I'm just looking over the numbers to just give you an idea of why I think Patrick Graham is going to continue to lean on a variety of guys. Just to give you an idea in terms of snap count last season, and granted, some of these guys were hurt, so their low numbers reflected on them just not being on the field much. But Jabal Sheard, he played 24% of the snaps. Lorenzo Carter was at 21%. Devontae Downs, 21%. Then you continue to go down the list. Carter Coughlin was just below 18%. Marcus Golden, 16%. Ximenez, 10%. Cam Brown was just below 9%. Nico Lelos played 6.5%. Trent Harris was out there for just over 6%. I must have listed at least 8 or 9 guys, and you could tell everybody was in that 25% or lower snap count. Now, part of it was injuries. Part of it was Marcus Golden was traded. There's a lot of factors, but the bottom line is he utilized everybody at his disposal, Paul. It wasn't as if he was saying, hey, I'm just going to give one guy 85 to 90% of the snaps and everybody will watch.
No, there's no question that Coach Graham is most interested in matchups. That's his deal. He's not a scheme-based guy. He is a matchup-based guy. And that's why versatility is so critical to him.
So that's why, going back to the last question by the caller, when you start to ask, well, how many guys could ultimately make the roster at the pass rushing situation? I would say more towards the higher number that they can keep than the lower number. If you project, okay, well, this was the snap count breakdown in 2020, and you figure Graham's going to want to duplicate that in 2021, then mm-hmm. of course he's going to campaign to try to keep as many people possible, especially if some of the late round draft picks last year prove that he can rely on them on the field, like the Cam Browns and the Carter Coughlins.
Well, you
Let's
talk
head
about
back. Yeah, go ahead.
I was only going to say, Lance, when you talk about the group of edge rushers, you know, Ellerson Smith to me is more of a defensive end than he is a stand-up edge rusher. So I don't necessarily think he's got to compete with the Carters and the Ximenezes and the Ojolaris and the Odenebos. I think he is more of a down defensive end with his hand in the dirt than he is a stand-up guy. So I think he kind of goes into a different pile. But you do have to look at it. Let's say Carter Coughlin, for example, who certainly showed flashes as a rookie last year. I know they like what he did on special teams. I know they like what he did on the outside. They were hoping to get him some snaps on the inside last season, but then things didn't work out because of injuries, and he didn't wind up playing any on the inside. But the versatility that they believe he has is certainly going to play well for him as he comes to camp this year, because he did start taking some practice reps on the interior of the defense last year. And that's something that is not going to go unnoticed when the coaching staff starts getting down to those final cuts.
Well, and that's why I said, because if you want to make the roster and you're the 5th or the 6th pass rusher, there's two things that you better prove. Number one, the ability to move around, line up on the inside. And number two, you have to play special teams. And the numbers fully back at least the special teams component, because Cam Brown played 77% on special teams last season. Mm-hmm. Carter Coughlin was just below 36%. So you know both of those guys, without any doubt, can contribute on specials. I don't think there's any concern whatsoever. And Nico Lelos played just above 17% on special teams, just to give you an idea. Devontae Downs was 62%. Those are the guys that have a good chance of making the roster again, because they know, hey, if we don't utilize you on the inside or the outside, we know at least you can play multiple situations on special teams.
Sure.
So that to me is the answer when you're trying to put together a hypothetical of how many guys do they keep and what it may look like. Look for, on the back end, the guys that played a lot of special team snaps in college for the ones incoming or the ones last year that were in that category. A reminder as we move along here on Big Blue Kickoff Live, let's all get vaccinated. Go to covid19.nj.gov/vaccine to register. With that being said, let's head back to the phone lines. Rick is in Tampa, and he joins us. What's happening, Rick?
Hey, Paul. Hey, Lance. What's up?
Hi.
How we doing?
How you doing? I'm doing good. Nice to talk to you. My once-a-week shot here. Hey, question for you. You guys yesterday were talking about possibility, contests, and things like that, you know, throw some things out. And I have a contest idea. Is that once training camp starts, and I guess when the 53-man roster is solidified, I'll call the Start Me Up, kind of the play on the Stones song, that the person will email or write in their starting lineup that will appear game one for offense, that'll appear on the field, and also the defense, the player who will start at every position. And the winner can get some prize or something from what you guys have in the big blue vault or something like that. Now, I would say that there'd be two shots, because I'd say you give somebody a shot from as soon as training camp starts, which is harder to predict, obviously. The people might make cut and stuff, and then also when the 53-man roster comes out, so we could pick up to a person, to a position, who's going to be starting offense and when defense. So that'll come into play, you know, who they're playing. You may know, you know, we're playing game week one, so it might be a fun idea for a contest. So what do you think of that real quick?
Well, it looks like you're trying to get some free stuff from the New York Giants. That's what it sounds like to me. I mean, that's my interpretation. You're really picking hard with respect to that.
Your idea for a contest, it was your idea.
Well, it wasn't my idea, because I wasn't on yesterday's show, so I can guarantee you it didn't come from my lips.
No, nor
I will
was
give you 100%, and it didn't come from Paul's lips.
No, I know it was neither. It was John and Jeff had the conversation. They said, we could have contests, so that's my contest idea. So let's do that. They were also comparing the draft of the teams in our division. And real quick, I just want to ask you, they did bring up how the Eagles took a lot of our players that we had. So I think there was a parallel in the Eagles' draft choices who they were targeting with our team, with the Giants. I think that they had similar, I don't know if it was coincidence, that they had similar guys they were targeting down the line, because according to like Jeff and them, they were saying that a couple of the players were ones that we wanted. So I just thought that was interesting how the Eagles had the similar draft picks in the back of their mind as on their board as we did. So I don't know if that's just coincidence. Maybe Paul, you could speak to that. And the other thing real quick is regarding Tim Tebow, your thoughts on that. What's the big deal if Jacksonville wants to use a roster spot for a guy who has never played tight end, but he's going to give him a shot? Do you think he'll make it? But I don't. If they want to do that, why is it? Why do people start hating on him, saying, "Oh, they're taking away a spot from this and that"? If they want to bring a character guy in their team, they're starting something new. They got a young quarterback, and they think he could bring something to their team. Why is everybody get so upset about it? And what's your thoughts on that, real quick? And do you think he'll actually be playing for them?
All right, Rick. Well, appreciate the phone call. Let's start in terms of the Philadelphia point, Paul. Well, first of all, you'd have to know what the Giants board looks like to say that they indeed were going after similar players. Yeah. I mean, I know you were very high on Kenneth Gainwell. That doesn't necessarily mean that the Giants were necessarily going to go all out to get him. I think we need to separate maybe the truth from the hyperbole with respect to that. As far as the DeVonta Smith speculation, I know there's a lot that perhaps if DeVonta Smith was still on the board, who knows, maybe the Giants hold on to the 11th overall pick and they select that player. So, you know, there was a lot of buzz with respect to that. As far as everybody else is concerned, I don't know if I'd go so far to say that we know for a fact that the Giants wanted a bunch of those players. I think Landon Dickerson is a solid offensive lineman, and they need help there. Milton Williams, a very underrated defensive lineman from a small program, Louisiana Tech.
I like him a lot, Lance.
Yes, and a
good
very
player.
Strong player. 100%.
Really
I'm completely
player.
With you. Gainwell, I referenced earlier. I know you were very high on him.
Big on Gainwell.
Memphis running backs have blossomed very nicely in the NFL, so I don't think you go wrong in terms of that direction. But you know, all of those guys, I think, are quality players that Philadelphia needs, because remember, they turned over that roster a lot. You got new coordinators, and when you have new coaching staff and you realize that you need to beef up the depth chart, there's no reason why you wouldn't want to bring in players that you think could get on the field and immediately contribute. And I think the names that we threw out there all have the ability to contribute in year number one.
I think the Eagles did pretty well in their draft. But then again, I think most teams did because this was a deep draft. I mean, honestly, there are a handful of teams that I don't think did very well, but everybody else in the league did really, really well. I mean, that's how much talent was coming out of the NCAAs this year. Now, I will say this, okay? If Jimmy has, or it's Rick, I guess, Rick was just on the line, if he has a spy who was actually in the Eagles boardroom, or for that matter, the Giants boardroom, and was able to compare some of the names on their list, then I think he and I need to go out for dinner, because I need those connections as well.
Well, that's what I'm saying, yeah. Because, and once again, I mean, get the Devontae Smith angle, but outside of that, I don't know if we could say with 100% confidence that the Eagles went after all the players the Giants wanted.
And by the way, let's make something very clear. I went through this exercise with Jeff and with John. I don't know if I went through it with you, Lance. The Giants are so much better off with the haul that they got in the package with the Bears and Kadarius Toney than if they had just taken Smith at the 11th pick. Hypothetically, if they had taken Smith, they are so much better off. If you really want to have any emotion toward the Eagles about what they did to jump the Giants and push the issue, my goodness, I would send them a thank you card because the Giants came out way ahead on this thing.
Well, they got a lot of volume. Just on the surface, I mean, none of these players have stepped on the field, but you walk away with still a playmaking wide receiver later on in the first round. You get a pick that helped you move up to grab Aaron Robinson. Let's not forget about that. And then you walk away with two first rounders next year. So from a volume standpoint, it's that package versus not necessarily just Devontae Smith, whoever you may have selected with the number 11 overall pick. I think that's how you have to look at it on the surface. But remember, we're not going to be able to truly solidify this debate until we see how Devontae Smith pans out, how Rashawn Slater, all these other guys that maybe the Giants could have selected until 3 or 4 years down the road. You got to see what develops. But at least on the surface right now, from a volume standpoint, yeah, it's hard to complain that the Giants didn't walk away with a lot of substance considering they wound up getting a wide receiver anyway later on in the first round, and then they put themselves in a position to gain some additional resources in 2022.
No question. And I think on the other part of what he was asking us, look, whatever happens to Tim Tebow, let's just say this, okay? We know that Urban Meyer is a guy who's going to do things his way. He's going to take some risks. He's going to take some chances. And if he's decided that bringing Tebow into camp with the Jaguars may provide some benefit, more power to him. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that Tebow is going to make the team and that he's going to produce. And I'm also not going to sit here and tell you that he can't make the team. If Urban Meyer has a role for him and he can fulfill that role, then by all means, there's nothing wrong with him making the team.
Every team is entitled to bring in who they want. They don't have to answer to anybody. They don't have to answer to the league. They don't have to answer to the court of public opinion. So I'm with you there, Paul. Plus, remember, Urban Meyer coached Tim Tebow in college. They have a very strong relationship. While we agree
disagree. No question.
Relationships, as we were talking with Lev Holly, right? Earlier, we were talking about relationships, right? He talked about who you meet in high school, maybe you meet down the road. So relationships is a big part of opportunity in life, okay? Let's not be naive. So Urban, who has a very strong relationship, I don't doubt that, with Tim Tebow. If Tebow has the itch to get back on the football field, he calls up his college coach, who he knows just got an NFL opportunity, and they say, sure, come on down. I'm sure that played a role. Here's the other thing, Paul. It's a 90-man roster right now. We got a long way to go until we get to 53, okay? Bringing in a guy who hasn't played football, I get it, in a long time, to make the 90-man roster, let him prove that he could hold up, that he could flourish in a new position, a position, by the way, that he was hesitant in playing, remember, Paul? Remember, there was speculation coming out of college that Tebow's not going to be a quarterback. He's going to have to move to tight end. He did not want to do that. He took the road of pursuing a quarterback position. It didn't work out. Now, all of a sudden, when 8 or 9 years passes by, you realize, okay, I'm open to it. So he's got to prove that he can outplay anybody else in camp and prove that he could do things that justify a 53-man roster spot. I will tell you this, Paul, regardless of how strong the relationship is between Urban Meyer and Tim Tebow, considering this is Urban's first opportunity as an NFL head coach, I don't think he's going to go all out of his way to give Tim Tebow a 53-man roster spot unless he truly believes he can contribute and help the team. I don't think you are in the luxury of doing that when you know you have a lot of skeptics and you're going to be put under the microscope because you've never coached on the NFL level.
To put it another way, Lance, I don't see him giving him a scholarship for nothing.
I think that's a very fair way to put it. It's a term we utilize here with the New York Giants. There's no reason why we can't apply it with the Jacksonville Jaguars. But I believe just from our back and forth, Paul, you and I are pretty much on the same line
yes.
with respect to this. And as far as the last caller's point, I think the reason why a lot of people have an issue with Tim Tebow getting an opportunity is because they're looking at an undrafted player who busted his you-know-what and is just clawing for an opportunity. He doesn't get it because he maybe doesn't have the same relationship as a Tim Tebow. And that viewpoint is perfectly fine, too. But my response to people who are annoyed for that individual is, let's not be naive that relationships don't hold some substance in life. And well, here's the latest example of that.
Look at their tight end depth chart, right? I mean, it's not exactly going to bowl you over.
Sure.
I mean, you know, Chris Manhertz, Luke Farrell, Tyler Davis, these are not household names at the position. So if Tebow can actually come in there and prove that he can produce at a level better than any of those guys, why shouldn't he get a roster spot?
And we've seen some crazy signings in the past, maybe a player that played basketball. Look at all the notable tight ends, by the way, in NFL history. Antonio Gates was a basketball player. Tony mm-hmm. Gonzalez was a basketball
mm-hmm.
player.
Mm-hmm.
Darren Waller, who is now thriving at a Pro Bowl level, was somebody who had drug issues. And all of a sudden, the Raiders gave him a second chance. And look at him now.
You know what, Lance? This comes back to the very same thing that we talk about all the time when we're strictly talking about football guys and not guys who've crossed over to baseball or basketball or anything else. And that is the core belief that competition is the best thing that you could have on your roster. Let them duke it out, let the best man win, and then hand that guy a roster spot. It's really pretty simple.
Absolutely. See, this to me is a different conversation. We'll get back to the phones here in a second. It's just an interesting conversation, just from a football perspective, not just the Giants, that if this was him being added to the roster, Paul, when they already finalized the 53-man roster and they're dropping somebody that's a more proven commodity, maybe there's a little bit more to talk about here. All right, hey, Urban's really going deep and beyond to do a favor for a friend. But when we're at the stage of a 90-man roster, as you mentioned, they don't have a lot of proven commodities at tight end. You're bringing in as much competition as possible. I think it's a very different conversation compared to if this was the middle of October, Tim Tebow hadn't played football for 5 or 6 years, and you're like, how realistically is this guy helping your team?
1,000%.
Let's head back to the phone lines as we move along here. 973-667-1960. Marco is in Connecticut. He joins us. What's happening, Marco?
Hey, Lance. Hey, Paul.
Hi.
I had just a point I wanted to make about the drafts for the in our division. And then I had a question, an NFL schedule question for you guys. My point about the draft is, yesterday the guy, Jeff and John, were talking about each team's draft class and kind of ranking them. And, you know, I started thinking about Dallas a little bit. And what jumped out to me about Dallas going into the draft was I thought they definitely needed to do something with their O-line. And I know, like, you know, probably fans from other teams are saying the same thing about the Giants. But where we differ is, I thought Dallas got really banged up last year. And I don't know if that was a sign of things to come, but it just appeared, you know, aside from the Prescott injury, those in the O-line really took a beating last year, especially Tyron Smith. Were you surprised that they didn't look to fill that role or kind of get some youth on that line from what happened last year with them?
Well, I think that Rashawn Slater certainly would have made sense for them given his versatility. And if they went in that direction, I wouldn't necessarily argue. But to take Micah Parsons at a position where Leighton Van Der Esch also hasn't really stayed healthy and Jalen Smith is looking for a bounce-back campaign, it's hard to dispute the fact that they didn't need help on the defensive side of things, no matter really what layer of their defense is concerned. And keep this in mind, too, and this is where I think a lot of people are overlooking the fact. They drafted Tyler Biadasz in the fourth round last year as a center who could very well be the starter this year. So, you know, last year and even in years past, they've continued to focus on the offensive line. Now, they are hoping and banking that, to your point, Tyron Smith holds up. Lyle Collins is not somebody that has an injury history. He's a younger guy. It was just, hey, unfortunately, he had to undergo the knife and miss the season. Connor Williams was a second-round pick in 2018. And Zach Martin, for the most part, has held up over the course of his career. I would say Tyron Smith is the one guy where you look at, okay, we're talking about a guy that's been in the league for over a decade. He's been wearing down. Yeah, would you like to have a little bit more insurance there? That's fair. Because, you know, you hope that, whether it be a Brandon Knight who filled in there or somebody else, that if Tyron has to miss a few games, that he's reliable. But the other players, I wouldn't really be too overly concerned that they're more at the end of the line.
You know, I think the only thing that I might add about to that, Marco, is that they had two picks in the fourth round. And, I mean, I don't know. Should they have taken somebody earlier than the guy that they took, Josh Ball? Maybe not. In my opinion, and I've said this about the Giants 1,000 times, but it applies to every team in the NFL. You know, a lot of times when I tell you guys about backdoor machinations of how things work in organizations, it's because I've been around forever and I know how these things go. And the conversations in the draft room are going to be, okay, once you get past those first couple of rounds, you have to ask yourself, is the guy on the board got a realistic chance to beat out the guys that we currently have on the roster? Otherwise, you have wasted the pick. It's really that simple. So if the Cowboys did not believe that there was any significant offensive line help, you know, beyond Josh Ball that they took in this draft, then the bottom line is they did the right thing by taking all defensive players.
Okay. Yeah, good points all around. I will just get my question out because I know you guys are up against the clock. The NFL schedule gets released. Is it tomorrow or Thursday?
Tomorrow.
But not the preseason, by the way. I've already contacted the NFL. The preseason schedule will not be out tomorrow. It is only the regular season schedule that's coming out. Well, preseason will be down the road.
And we're all dying to predict who the Giants are going to play in the first preseason game, obviously. I mean, the anticipation is killing us all on that front. So we'll have to wait a little bit longer until we get confirmation on that.
Here's my question. They will announce then with the schedule, they will announce the national games of Sunday night, Monday night, Thursday night. Do you think that the NFL is keeping a tight beat on what's going on in Green Bay with Rodgers? You know, if they're going to go and put Green Bay in, let's say, four or five national games, only for him to get traded before the season starts, and now they have Jordan Love starting in those games. Does that impact you? Like, I know, like, Lance, you do a lot with the national reporters. Do you think that's something they're keeping a tight pulse on or not?
I think it may have some type of impact on the conversation. I don't think it's overwhelming because nobody has a crystal ball. Plus, the other thing with the schedule is, and this is why I don't get too caught up in it, you don't know whether or not Aaron Rodgers would stay healthy for all 16 games. So you could put the Packers on prime time, and then in week 14, do you know Aaron's going to be on the field? I mean, there were two seasons where Aaron got hurt in 2013 and 17. So to me, that's just as much of a risk as to whether or not they actually wind up moving him before the season. So I can't get too caught up in that. Maybe I give them one less game just to protect myself, but I don't think it's going to change that much of the conversation.
Marco, I think I've got to clarify these things for you because the way this works, the league isn't so much concerned about the marketability of those games or those players. It's the networks that want to influence that. So your question really is better posed to NBC, Fox, CBS, NFL Network, ESPN. It's better posed to them. Do they care about the future of Aaron Rodgers and where he's going to play? Because it is the networks who go to the NFL and they are constantly, and I mean constantly, trying to influence where they think they can get the most bang for their buck on the schedule that they get handed by the NFL when this whole thing finally sorts itself out. It's not really the league who sits there and says, oh, we want Aaron Rodgers in week one playing the Chicago Bears. That's not the way it works. It's more the networks are saying, you know, we really wanted Aaron Rodgers at Lambeau in his home opener. Right. That's where the influence comes from.
Well, but remember, that's also why they added the flexibility of tweaking Monday night games later on in the season. I believe that may go into effect this year, correct, if I'm correct. So they have things built in with the new network deals to say, hey, in the event there's major developments that we didn't anticipate, you know, we could switch out of those games. Remember, they usually couldn't switch out of Monday night games. It's only the Sunday primetime. Now, I think it's about a two-week notice. You can notify and you could switch out a Monday night game. So there's protections that are going to be built in, which is a reason why I wouldn't get too caught up on speculation regarding Aaron Rodgers.
Injuries aside, you can't predict those, but I would think that the networks, that Paul, you're right, the networks would prefer, you know, they would love to put a Deshaun Watson or an Aaron Rodgers in primetime. But now with those guys being in flux, and Rodgers is definitely in flux, we don't know what's going to happen with him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious to see where they land, especially on the early part of the schedule where you can't flex games out. But thanks, guys.
Take care. Well, that is true, but Lance's comment is also true in that the additional flex games that they're talking about, in fact, not talking about, they have implemented now for 2021, does make that initial schedule a little bit less concrete, because you do have many more opportunities for these networks to then flex their muscles and say, look, we really wanted to get that matchup, or we really wanted to get that guy in prime time. The league is now going to have a better chance of softening their stance later on and saying, okay, you know what, we'll get you in week 12. We'll take care of you. We'll flex out that 14 game, week 14 game for you. Before there was only the flex schedule with the NBC games. And look, I'm not going to lie to you. As a fan, I get the fact that you want to see the best games in prime time, but it kind of stinks for people who are trying to make arrangements to go to games.
Oh, sure, it really does. Yeah, especially if you're going out of town, yeah.
It's terrible. You're planning a road trip. Let's say, for argument's sake, you're planning to go see the Giants play the Cowboys down in Dallas. And all of a sudden, you find out that the game is flexed to Sunday night, or the game's been flexed to Monday Night Football. That kind of screws things up for you, doesn't it?
Sure. Yeah, especially if it was a Sunday afternoon game and you had plans to fly back later in the game. Of course, it's going to create all headaches. That's why anybody who is planning to go out of town, especially later in the season when the flex scheduling comes into play, I think you always need to have some built-in flexibility and anticipate will be some change. Yeah, I mean, if you don't, then you're really living under a rock and not realizing what's happening with the NFL. The other thing, just real quickly before we close up shop here, Green Bay is a very big market, not size-wise, but popularity. What I mean by that is there's Packers fans spread out across
the
nation.
They're like the Cubs in football.
Correct,
really.
100%. So when the caller brought up Aaron Rodgers, the league is also not necessarily focusing on Aaron Rodgers. They're saying, hey, if we put the Packers on Sunday night, the ratings are going to be good because we have Packers fans in markets all across the nation. Same thing with the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Dallas Cowboys. So that, to me, is more of an influence than necessarily the players on the roster, because once again, you just don't know if those guys are going to be fully healthy by the time we get to that primetime game. So I look at more of the market, the popularity of the team, than per se who's actually on the roster.
Although when Tom Brady went to the Buccaneers, that immediately meant
100%.
That they were going to be a primetime team.
Well,
that
would be an exception where one guy, the greatest, if not the greatest, at a position is, of course, going to change.
And you know Trevor Lawrence is going to get a couple of games. You know that.
There will be intrigue. Yes.
They are going to get probably, I would say, two primetime games this year as opposed to Jacksonville, which you probably would avoid like the plague in primetime if you could have before this.
Well, I don't know off the top of my head, but you just got me curious. Do the Jets play the Jaguars this season? Because if they do, I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there. I would think that would be consideration for a primetime game. Trevor Lawrence against Zach Wilson, top two picks in the NFL draft. I don't know.
They play them at MetLife Stadium.
Okay, so you're going to tell me you wouldn't consider that game?
I think that's got a lot of possibilities.
There you go.
I really do.
We're making the schedule easy for the schedule makers. There you go. All right? We'll give them some crumbs. So that will be revealed tomorrow night. We'll get into that and more as we move along on Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Appreciate everybody for tuning in. Thanks again to Lev Holly, the head football coach at Blount High School, where Kadarius Toney played. A reminder that this is part of the Giants Podcast Network on the Giants mobile app, podcast platforms everywhere, and at Giants.com/podcast. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Stay locked to Giants.com for all the latest, and we will speak to you on Wednesday right here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Have a good one.